Sex Bob-omb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
Voices, animal voices, the tremor of cold, the feminine of this soon, reaching my threshold, staring at the truth till I'm blind. Okay, After Rotters, we've got some treats for you this evening. I've got special guests tonight, Kim Poirier and Ray Ellingson. Give them your warnings, but be careful. I understand they can kick your arses.
Right.
Welcome to the show, Kim and Ray.
Thank you for having us, especially Ray. He can definitely kick your arse.
I saw that.
I'm a pacifist.
No, you're not.
But it's all good. It's clean, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you guys are going to probably be one of my first real guests to have on the show that actually have done things as far as zombies and comic books. And I'm really jazzed about this and glad you guys were willing to come on.
Oh, absolutely.
Wow. We're glad to be able to break your cherry or pop your cherry.
Woo-hoo!
Woo-hoo!
So I just wanted to do a little bit of a quick thing on Kim and then a little bit of a quick thing on Ray. And just let's talk about some of the stuff that you guys have all been involved upon and then just get into the real meat of stuff like zombies and comics. Woohoo!
Zombies and comics, oh my!
Oh, and by the way, I have to give you a little warning. Uh-huh. I've drunk a lot of Coke, I've had my cookies for the show, and normally I have people who hold me back, so I get a little kooky.
Awesome!
But I have to say one thing. When I was reading over your IMDb again, Kim, I saw that you were in Puppets Who Kill.
Yes, I was.
That was a freaky, weird, awesome show.
It really was. It was kind of creepy, and it's really weird acting with a puppet.
Do you have to, like, visualize and stuff?
Well, I mean, there's a guy who's holding the puppet, obviously, and he's doing all the motions, but it's, you have to stay focused on the puppet, because there were a couple times where I'd be tempted to actually look at the guy, not the puppet, so you got to stay focused on the puppet, and, you know, when you really get into it, and then you allow the puppet to come to life and really be affected by that, it in a really creepy way, has this profound effect on you.
Awesome. I think everybody should watch that show. It's awesome Canadian content. I just picked up the seasons earlier this year on Boxing Day because, you know, in Canada, we do that.
Yes. Yeah, in the United States, we don't have Boxing Day here. When I first came to the U.S., I was like, oh, let's go Boxing Day shopping. Woohoo! And they were like, huh?
And my American thought on Boxing Day was people I got in the ring together, and I wasn't sure what that was all about. I thought Canadians were actually peaceful.
And I'm like, no, that's when you can go and get, like, really cool stuff for great prices. And Ray's like, oh, okay.
But that's every day down there in the States right now, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah, yeah. Especially food and wine.
Ah, food and wine. I've heard about those things.
You know, I noticed it that, like, I used to go grocery shopping in Toronto, and then when I moved to the U.S. and I'd go grocery shopping in California, I was amazed at how much cheaper food was, and a bottle of wine is like a third of the price.
Whoa. Well, that's because they grow it nearby, right?
There's that, too, but even imports are remarkably cheaper.
But the flip side to that is you pay $2,000 a month for a 400-square-foot studio apartment.
Then there's that.
Yeah, we got a couple of those downtown in Toronto, but for the rest of it, no, it's not quite that bad.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And gas is pretty high here. So go on, back to zombies.
Back to zombies, and back to some of the stuff that you've been in. Decoys.
Yes. Decoys.
Decoys and Decoys 2. Watched those movies a long time ago.
Did you?
They were fun movies.
They were. They were a lot of fun. We shot the first one back in 2003 in Ottawa. And then we shot the second one in Edmonton. I think it was in 2005 or 2006. I can't quite remember.
All I remember is seeing a lot of snow.
There was a lot of snow and it was very cold. That first day of shooting, it was minus 35 outside. And I was wearing this, like, and I hate the cold. I mean, you and I discussed that before the show started. I was in this little pink jumpsuit with, like, a bikini top and little pink pants. And I'm, like, licking an ice cream cone. And I've got no gloves on, no hat on, no scarf. My whole, like, chest area is exposed. And it's minus 35, and it was a blizzard, and all the crew is, like, wearing parkas, and I'm freezing my ass off, but my character loved the cold, so that's where all the real acting came in.
Well, the good thing is, you pulled it off, because you and the other girls who were in that particular set of scenes, it did not look like you were freezing your butts off.
Oh, good. Oh, and good. Mission accomplished.
Now that I know it was in Edmonton in the middle of winter, I have more sympathy now, because I know how cold it gets out that way.
Yeah. It's a sharp cold that hits you to the bone.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, the movie I watched again last night and saw a lot of amusing ranting going on in my postings, Dawn of the Dead, the 2004 yeah. edition.
I actually saw that on Facebook. I commented, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Facebook is awesome. You yeah. can interact with people and just be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, how long have we known each other on Facebook for?
Probably about 3 or 4 or 5 years now, I think.
Yeah. Did I meet you through, I think I met you through James Gunn, no?
On MySpace, originally.
Yes, yes, that's where it was. So it was way more than 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, some people do still use MySpace. I still see some traffic.
Musicians.
Yes, it's good for music. If you want to hear the indies and the new guys and the stuff getting out and coming down.
Yeah, yeah, that's really the place to be.
And then, of course, the stuff that I originally first saw you on, Hyperspace on Space Network.
Uh-huh, on the Space Channel.
Yep. The hostess with the mostest, as they like to say out that way.
Aw, thank you. Yeah, that was a really fun show. I did that for about 4 years, and I had a really great crew that I was working with, and it was just great to go in and shoot the show every day.
And it looked like you guys all had fun. I mean, I think it's much more, I don't know what the word I want to say is, more professional, more, hey, we're in a business type thing. But in the older days when it was originally starting, it looked like you guys were a lot more fun and involved in having just an enjoyable sequence.
Yeah, I think part of that had to do with different producers running the show.
That could do it.
A different focus. You know, when CTV Globe Media bought Chum Television, there were a lot of changes that happened within the building. So there could have been, some recommendations coming down from the higher ups. But the show definitely transitioned into something more, I think, sort of like a CTV kind of e-talk kind of show, I think is what they were going for, / genre related.
Suits versus guys in t-shirts.
Right. I mean, when I shot the show, it was like, I remember when I first started, you know, I went in with like little outfits and Simon Evans was like, you know, and I felt uncomfortable for some reason. And I couldn't quite place it. And Simon was like, you know, it's kind of more of a jeans and t-shirt show. And I was like, oh. And then I started going in and wearing jeans and t-shirt and just the way that they used to write for me and for the show, it was so, I don't know, it was a lot of fun. It was very casual and very easy.
That always sounds like a good working environment when you're happy about being there.
Yeah, yeah. It was. We had a lot of fun and we laughed a lot. Like, I got to travel with Simon. We went to Vancouver. We went to Los Angeles 2 or 3 times. We went to Toronto. We went to, no, sorry, not Toronto. We went to Vancouver, New York. No, New York's the one I didn't say. Anywho, we went all over the place and I just had a ton of fun with those guys.
Places and spaces and places and places.
Yeah.
So the other one thing I wanted to top on is you're Canadian.
I am.
And now in the States.
I am.
What's the differences like? And do you miss the snow?
Yes, I miss the snow at Christmas time. But I was born in Quebec and then I grew up in Toronto. I moved to Toronto when I was 2. And then, or as Torontonians like to call it, Toronto. And then I moved to Vancouver and I lived there for about 1.5 years. And I've been here for just over 3 years.
Awesome. And you're digging the warmth there, I hear.
I'm digging the warmth. I'm a huge fan of the heat and the sun. I mean, I love that it's sunny 364 days of the year.
Well, at least it's not Seattle where it's the opposite, where it's rainy 364 days of the year.
Right, and that was my biggest challenge with Vancouver. It was rainy all the time.
Yeah, it gets like that.
Yeah.
So, Ray...
Yes.
I don't actually know much about you at all, except what I've read on your IMDb. And once I read that, I was like, wait, I've seen one of those movies.
I'm sorry.
No, no, it's okay. I had some good things to say about it when I watched it.
Uh-oh. Okay, which one was this?
Pandemic.
Okay. Okay. My dog's actually in that movie.
Really?
Yeah, she's the one who spreads the virus.
Awesome.
Chloe spreads the virus?
She sure does.
Oh my god, that's hilarious. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, that was her first film.
Cool.
And she's gone on to do numerous other things. She has a bigger career than I do, actually.
Well, you've got a lot of credits going on here for doing a wide variety of documentary and other types of movies. I wasn't very familiar with, where was the movie that was there? The Rainmakers, which seemed to be a good one.
We, yeah, The Rainmakers was sort of a homage to this old film called Billy Jack. It takes place in the 70s. It's sort of hippies and bikers and Vietnam War vets, and we had a lot of fun with it. We shot it out in Arizona, and our 2 days into shooting, half our budget fell out, so we had a lot of fun trying to finish that film. So we were really lucky, though. We had Jake Busey was part of that, and Ray Weiss, and some pretty staple actors who didn't really care if they were getting paid or not at that point. They were just on for the ride. So we had a lot of fun with it.
Well, that's awesome, because it's in the industry, and I'm not that familiar with your industry as per se.
Neither am I.
Excellent. Learning is good.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's great when you can have a crew in that actually is willing to support and work and do the team build and bond thing. Right?
No, it was fantastic. I was really dreading this conversation that I had to have to the cast and crew saying, hey, look, I'm going to shoot as much as I can, but we may not finish this film. And Richard Hatch, who from Battlestar Galactica, was in the film as well, and he said, well, so why are you leaving? Because we're not going anywhere.
Nice.
And at that point, I really knew I had a good crew with me. So, and we finished it and got it out to the market, and everything went well.
Nice.
Exactly. Very extremely cool.
Yeah.
And I forgot the thought that I had in my head, and it went somewhere else, so I'm going to go and move on to something else. So you've got all these videos and movies or whatever of doing defensive tactics, hand-to-hand combat stuff, skills for actors, body language, voice skills, and stuff like that. What's that all about? I saw one little video on YouTube the other night. It just seemed to be like a little bit, a couple of excerpts from the one video, and it's like, that was pretty neat.
Oh, yeah. I had a production company before Moving Pictures Media Group, which is our current company, which Kim's also a partner in. I had another company actually called Ugly Old Bird Productions.
Nice name.
Yeah. And the partner I had in that company, he and I, we'd been doing about a film a year, but in the meantime, we had this production company that crickets were chirping in. So we decided that it might not be a bad idea to expand out. We'd done some commercial work. We'd done infomercials. And then we got into the instructional video market. And it was really sort of a booming market when we started. And it just wound up being, you know, fulfilling a lot of time. And we got to do kind of what we wanted. The Skills for Actors series was kind of unique because my partner and I, he was actually one of Cirque du Soleil's top performers. And yeah, he and I were sitting around lamenting at lunch one day about how all of our crappy actor friends were always coming up to us, and because I had martial arts skills and he had circus skills, and they'd always come up to us and go, hey, you know, I've got this audition. Can you teach me some karate moves? And I'd be like, great, sure. When's your audition? They're like, tomorrow morning. And, you know.
I'm sorry, but I have to chuckle at that.
That doesn't work.
That's funny, and it doesn't work like that. Skill sets are learned.
And in their defense,
actors,
so the crappy actors,
yes.
Oftentimes we don't get the sides until like the night before the audition. That's when we get the call. So
my sort of rebuttal to that is learn to be a Renaissance person.
We don't all have your skills.
Right. But no, so we decided we were going to do a series called Skills for Actors. And our big pitch was give us 30 minutes. We'll teach you a skill and don't come ask us next time. That actual last part wasn't on the videos, but we wound up doing circus skills and martial arts skills and gun handling skills and voice skills, and they were immensely successful. So that kind of, you know, that led the charge, and we wound up doing a bunch of those types of videos for a while.
So as part of that, because I'm also a big fan of watching full contact type movies, I love watching, well, we won't call them violent movies, but there always seems to be an element to it.
Mm-hmm.
How often, and I imagine it happens frequently, when you're getting into the fight scenes, bam, 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 and somebody cold clocks somebody for real?
It happens at least once. You know, the problem is you sort of get in a rhythm and you sort of get in the groove, and then you relax, and that's when the accidents happen because you're not conscientious of, oh, I could actually hurt somebody. But nobody, you know, in anything I've ever done, and I've done a lot of films and a lot of choreography, and nobody's ever gotten really, really hurt on anything I've been on.
Cool.
But you know, you get tagged once in a while and you kind of laugh it off, and you hope that it doesn't show up on camera, that you're not bleeding profusely so you can get on with the next scene.
Well, come on, that adds elements to it, does it not?
Yeah.
Realism, the whole sake of giving it your all for the project and whatever all else.
Real blood, yeah!
Well, that's cool. I mean, it sounds like you guys are a good mix of various little talents going on, of casting on different things, and the little discussion you guys had there about, oh, the actor versus the choreographer and stuff, seems like it was an ongoing conversation that has been multiple times in the past.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we do have, we have four partners in our company, and we have, you know, Kim's an established actress. I've directed and written. We have one of our partners is he's a three-time Academy Award-winning post-sound designer. And we have one of our partners was the top performer for Cirque du Soleil. So we've got a lot of kind of varied skills in our company.
Oh, yes. You have a rounded out crew of people as part of the company. So with the ongoing, and I'm a big fan of watching and seeing how things change over a period of time, like 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, seeing how movies were done, how literature was done, and all this other stuff, and how it changes, develops, and progresses and evolves. With that kind of a group, and with the world technology thing going on, the internet, and all this other stuff, how do you find making movie stuff nowadays versus a while ago?
I think it really allows us to take a project and the audience gets to experience it on multiple platforms. Whereas before it was like, okay, there may be a book and then it's a movie. You know, now it could be a book, it could be a movie, it could be a graphic novel, it could be a video game, it could be a phone app. You know, like there's just so many different mediums that you can enjoy it now, which is terrific.
And from the standpoint of making films, it's actually become a lot easier as filmmakers. You know, we've, you know, finally embraced the digital era. And when you make a film digitally, you know, it used to be anybody with an 8mm camera could go out and shoot a movie, but then how do you edit it? How do you put everything together? Now anybody with a camcorder and an iPhone can shoot a feature film.
Yeah, somebody shot a feature film on an iPhone before.
And it's not terrible.
Yeah. A number of people have done it. There's been a few. There's one where it's actually done in stereoscopic, where they have 10 iPhones done on a rack.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they film the whole thing from multiple angles.
Yeah, that's it's become a lot easier now, you know, with the digital age, I guess, if you want to refer to it as that. It's become a lot easier to make films. And it's been a lot easier for audiences to access films.
Mm-hmm.
Both legally and illegally. And we don't like the people doing it the illegal ways.
No.
Yeah. Piracy is actually not a victimless crime, is what I was told.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also they're going to hell, so screw them. But now we move into some of my favorite stuff, which is zombies. Because I hear you guys are doing some stuff with zombies soon.
We are.
Do you guys play with zombies a lot? Do you read, watch, all that fun stuff as far as zombies are concerned?
Absolutely. I mean, playing with them, we're afraid to get bit, but...
There's safe techniques to deal with that.
Well, there are leash laws here in LA for them, so...
And a muzzle.
Yes.
Awesome.
But yes, with regards to everything else, Kim's actually had experience in zombie films with Dawn of the Dead, obviously, and I've just been a big fan from the other side of it up until now, mostly.
Cool. Would you have a favorite zombie movie that you would say that one is the bomb?
100 Days of Death is the bomb.
That would be our project.
That's the project we're working on right now.
I was going to introduce that one a little later. So we'll go past and say, what's your number two favorite movie then?
Well, I'm sitting next to Kim and I don't want to get punched, so
obviously
Dawn of the Dead. but I'm a big fan of 28 Days Later as well. I think that sort of set a new standard for zombie films.
Which leads into fast zombies, slow zombies.
Fast
zombies.
Uh-huh. Always the fast movers.
How can you be scared of something that's going really slowly?
True.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me of the slow zombies remind me of the Austin Powers 100-point turn in the hallway in the first movie.
Or like Halloween, like the old Halloween movies. I remember watching them when I was a kid, I was scared. And then when I watched them when I was older, it's like Mike Myers is just like walking so slowly. I don't know how that's intimidating.
Yeah, if you had a pair of sneakers, you'd be in no danger.
Exactly.
Yep, and definitely agree with you on that. I've always been a fan of the slow zombies for different reasons, because if you have too many fast zombies, it's a guarantee right off the bat, bam, civilization cannot survive that.
Interesting. It thins the herd a lot more, and you have the ones that do survive actually possibly deserve it.
Yeah, you would definitely survive.
Me?
Oh, yeah. You've got enough arsenal in here to like keep you going for years.
Which is cool that you mention that, because this is one of the topics of conversation I periodically broach on the show, is A, should humanity survive? B, will humanity survive? And C, does it even get a chance to get to that point?
Wow, Kim, you want to field any of that in any particular
order? Yeah, where do we want to start? Do you want to start with A?
Sure.
What was A again?
Will humanity survive?
Should humanity survive or will?
Correct. Should it survive?
Yeah.
That's your answer? Yeah? Just like
well,
that?
I mean, should it survive? Yes, but I mean, it would definitely, it would be an interesting evolutionary, it would be interesting for the evolution of man should humanity survive, should few select humans survive, and let's say we survive the apocalypse and eventually the zombies die off, like it would just be interesting to, you know, restart civilization and how that would all come to fruition.
Should humanity survive? Well, I think, you know, there's an evolution of the Ice Age and that sort of made a lot of species extinct and some did survive that. I think it's a, you know, thinning the herd or survival of the fittest. Mm-hmm. If you want to go back to that whole theory. But I think that will it survive? Should it survive? Sure, absolutely, it should. I think it maybe needs to be culled a bit every once in a while, but...
Okay, granted on both of those points, because my thing has always been, well, you got to weigh the pros and cons. I mean, on the one side, you've got humanity, you've got all the great things that they've produced, but then you've got Honey Boo Boo.
Right.
Which, I'm sorry, I threw that one out in every conversation I go on this. And all this reality TV and all these people of Walmart and all of this real strong negativity stuff that permeates the internet and everybody on all that bad angry stuff that goes on over there, offsetting beautiful music, art.
Louis Armstrong and It's a Wonderful World.
Precisely. Yeah. All that stuff.
Well, that's the thinning the herd or culling process, I think. And hopefully the negative side will get culled in that.
But I think there's always going to be negative. Where therein lies positive, there lies negative. You know, as far as the pendulum swings left, it swings just as far right. So, you know, I think there's always going to be some sort of negativity. I don't think you can completely rid yourself of that. It's not always rainbows and butterflies and unicorns.
Have you ever seen the movie Legend with Tim Curry?
Of course.
There can be no light without the dark.
Correct. So, yeah, I don't. Should humanity survive? Absolutely. But I think, you know, there's going to be a reckoning at some point, I'm sure, as there has been historically throughout mankind's history.
And I think, you know, the aspect of zombies becoming a reality is becoming more and more realistic in the sense that, you know, I think zombies in television or in film is sort of the heightened reality, but the aspect of there being some sort of human pandemic that could swipe across the planet is becoming something that we're getting closer and closer to that could actually happen.
Well, I think I'll go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry. I was going to say it could definitely happen. I mean, yeah. The CDC contains the strongest container of smallpox in the world, and smallpox has literally been abolished throughout the entire world. Yeah. But they have that one little vial there sitting in the CDC that if it ever broke out, within 3 days, that could infect the entire planet.
And did you see the new the zombie cell that was like smaller than a human cell?
Yes.
That is crazy.
Have you seen the fungus? I can't remember the name of it. Some nice long scientific name that lives in the Amazon forest. There's about 10,000 different variations of this species, and it infects an animal, say a spider or whatever. Mm-hmm. It becomes grossed out, completely disoriented, and then it falls, and then it dies, and then the fungus just grows out through its body.
Oh my god.
And then the ones that fly like butterflies and whatever, so It gets up there and it flies and it lands on a branch and then it explodes and spores rain down and infect more.
Whoa.
So it's both germinating and pollinating.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a likelihood statistically. I mean, you look at the CDC, as you mentioned, they actually have a zombie preparedness website, and I think, you know, they do it, I'm sure, to garner interest because of all things zombies. But I think they're also pretty serious about, you know, look, we've experienced things like Katrina, and it took 9 days to get water to Louisiana. And if more people had been prepared, themselves, there would have been a lot less. I think there would have been a lot less people that died in that situation.
Yeah, less casualties.
Absolutely, because any of the skills that you learn or the preparations that you prepare for being ready for a zombie apocalypse will help for any crisis.
Yeah, sure. I completely agree.
Sure.
Of course, so. I think the thing that they don't teach or a lot of people don't get are the skills of how to work as a group.
Yeah.
Very true.
And that's why, and I'm going to go to The Walking Dead because I love the series and I love the comic. Mm-hmm. It's a great story, and I think the main reason why it works is because it's a story about people interacting with the situation. Oh, and by the way, there's some zombies.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why Battlestar Galactica was so successful is that it was a human drama set in space, and it really was about the human drama, and similar to The Walking Dead, it really is a human drama. It's about the humanity and the horror that these people go through amidst this zombie apocalypse.
And how they interact during periods of extreme stress or situations.
And how they band together and relate to one another and bond and fight.
How there's always that devious little son of a gun kitten in the corner. I'm going to kill them all. I'm going to kill them all. I'm going to kill them all.
Right.
Now there's one in every crowd.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then that moves us over to comics. Were you guys comic book guys?
Kim, you first.
Well, I became a comic book fan when I was working at Space Channel. I don't know if you remember, but every Wednesday was New Comic Book Day. Woohoo!
Exactly.
So I always got introduced to new comics every week, but I have to say my fave was Frank Miller's graphic novels.
Nice. Excellent choice on Frank Miller, his Dark Knight. That series just takes Batman and goes, woo, let's make it extreme.
Oh, yeah.
And then he went back retro to year one, which I think was equally as amazing.
Exactly.
So, yes, as far as me being a comic fan, I've been a huge comic fan. I had a Fantastic Four collection that was 3 to 112 complete, and I was pretty proud of that.
I'm a little jealous.
Yeah, Silver Age, go, go. And I also was partners in a comic book store for years.
Awesome.
So, yes, I'm a huge fan.
So are you Marvel, DC, or other?
Oh, wow. interesting. I'd like to say I lean more toward the Marvel universe because that's what I sort of grew up with, and those were, you know, obviously Fantastic Four was my favorite comic, awfully dedicated to that, which was Marvel.
Are you a big Kirby fan?
I loved Jack Kirby. I was fortunate enough to be able to meet him before he passed away. I lived out in Thousand Oaks, and so did he.
Okay, now I'm more jealous.
And I have a, he was kind of funny on the 100th anniversary, the wedding of two of the characters in Fantastic Four, if you're not a big FF fan, but Reed Richards and Sue Storm, he wrote in the all on the margins, and I still have the comic, all on the margins for the first five pages, he wrote this letter to me, which I thought was awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah. So yes, I was a big Jack Kirby fan.
Okay, so do you continue to still read comic books and still follow some things?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big Ed Brubaker fan. Nice. Just anything he comes out with, I'm there at the comic book store getting it on Friday.
Awesome. And okay, I have some strong opinions on both Marvel and DC and some of the other comic book companies out there. I mean, I think Marvel and DC are slowly hurting themselves.
Of course.
And the indies are the ones that are still propping up the industry. And I'd love to see them still continue to grow. But we're getting into the same dynamic that's happening in the book world, where everything's moving to electronic, and the value behind that just doesn't seem to be the same.
Correct. Yeah, I'm a big indie fan, too, because it gives a lot of artists and a lot of storytellers a chance to actually get their work out there, whereas they wouldn't have a shot with the two, you know, the big two that they used to be.
Yeah, well, now they're not as big as they used to, or still are even bigger, but not on this side of the world sort of thing. It's kind of a weird dichotomy I think they're going into, but it's fun stuff.
Yeah.
So I hear you guys are working on a project called 100 Days of Death. What the heck is that about?
Well, Kim, you want to do it? You want me?
Yeah, really? You wrote it.
It's based on a novel that I wrote that I actually got a publishing deal for.
It's based on a trilogy of novels.
It is based on a trilogy of novels, but I haven't written book two or three yet.
But the first installment is being published this June through Netmines.
So
awesome. But I noticed that you've got a name for the second book already.
Another 100 Days of Death. It didn't, not incredibly original, I know, but it fits.
And the third one's called 1,000 Days of Death.
which takes place 2.5 years after the fall of humanity.
Cool.
2.5 years, by the way, I did the math with a calculator. It actually turns out to be 1,000 days of death. So just for those curious.
Well, there's a lot of nerds out there. I'm sure they would have been figuring out, okay.
Got it. Well, I needed a calculator, so I figured I'd help everybody else out.
Awesome. So I noticed it's book, movie, graphic novel, and it seems to be all a contiguous or a combined sort of releasing strategy. Was that a planned sort of thing, or was it just sort of it developed that way?
It was definitely a plan too. I think there's a certain method in releasing all the different elements. You know, I think you release the novel first, and then the graphic novel, and then the film. But yeah, it's a story. It's similar to The Walking Dead. You know, it really is about humanity, and it's the story of a man finding his humanity as he battles through a zombie-infested post-apocalyptic world. And he's not your typical hero. You know, he's not the guy that runs to save the day. In fact, he actually doesn't really want the responsibility of this surrogate family that showed up at his door. But in letting people into his life, and in actually taking responsibility and helping out these people on how everybody bands together, he finds himself in the process, and he's enriched because of that. And the novel is told in first story. It's a first-person tale, whereas the film script is going to be, it's not going to be in first person. There won't be any narration through the film.
Mostly because I think that narratives or narration in films is sort of an excuse, only done effectively in very few films.
It's a massive info dump. Dun-dun-dun-dun. This is why I'm doing this. This is why I'm doing that. Ooh, okay.
And I'm a big believer in show it, don't tell it, so.
Good. And then, go ahead.
No, I was just saying good.
Mm. And then for the graphic novel, Tommy Castillo is actually giving his spin on it, where I met Tommy Castillo actually in Toronto at the WizardCon a little over 2 years ago. We totally hit it off, and then when it came time to do the graphic novel, I was like, hey, we should get Tommy Castillo involved. So I showed Ray his art, and he was like, oh, love it. Contacted Tommy, and then he read the novel, and he's like, I'm in, guys. So the graphic novel, we're doing a 4-issue graphic novel story arc, and it's actually Tommy's spin on it and his interpretation of 100 Days of Death. So he'll be drawing it and writing it.
I wasn't able to get quite as dark and twisted as he was, so it'll be interesting to see.
He's got some awesome artwork.
Oh, yeah.
He has great art. And the initial sketches he gave us just blew our socks off. So
we're currently doing a Kickstarter campaign right now with Tommy Castillo. If you were to go on Kickstarter and look up 100 Days of Death, you'll see all the cool goodies we're giving away and all the swag. And you actually have an opportunity to be drawn by Tommy Castillo as a comic character in the Forest
Story. Ooh, that sounds like so much fun.
Uh-huh. And we're also giving away a chance to come to the premiere of the film. We're giving a chance to
be in the film.
Be in the film. You can be a featured zombie in the film or one of the survivors. You can come. We'll fly you out to LA, and you get to visit all the places that were used in the novel. So you'll get to go to Target. You'll get to go to visit. Well, I don't want to give it too much away in the novel, but you'll get to visit
all
the spots.
There's more exciting places than Target. But I actually, when I wrote it, I went and traveled to every place I was going to write about first, and all the places in the novel actually exist, and I did actually travel to them all the way up the coast. I wound up sailing up the California coast. I went to Monterey, San Francisco. San Francisco is not quite as destroyed as it is in my novel, but still a lot of fun to hang out.
Wait, I have to throw something in there quickly.
Yeah.
Survivors? There's survivors? How can there be survivors? Okay, I'm just joking.
Right?
There's survivors, but very few. Mm-hmm. And by the way, they're very fast.
Yes.
Oh, okay, well, yeah. Mm-hmm. So then that can now lead into the writing stuff, because do a lot of horror writing as well. But
okay.
How do you find yourself writing? Do you are you a plotter or a pantser, as the expression has been developing nowadays?
I started out writing screenplays, so you have to be very organized with an outline, and you have to know where your story arc's going. You know, they sort of demand this 3-act, you know, story arc, so, and you have to know where the end is going within 100 pages. So I was organized, but with 100 Days of Death, writing the novel, which was, it was my first novel experience. I kind of started to do the outline. I knew all the places I wanted to go, and then I just got in my car and went there, traveled for about 2 weeks. And when I got back, I had
so much, I mean, I had so much inspiration that I literally sat at my computer for, you know, I'd like to say that I wrote 100 Days of Death in 100 days, but I wrote it in 106 days. I just couldn't.
Well,
line.
Six is not bad to be off. I mean, you can use that as marketing. It's good tags. It sounds wonderful.
Well, what would have been great is because it's told in a journal format, you know, day one through 100, I would have really loved to have been coming in at the wire at 100 days.
Well, you can edit.
Right? Okay.
And being that it's about horror and zombies and stuff like that, do you visualize the action that is going through as you're writing it? Or do you just sort of, oh, okay, the points are this, da-da-da-da. Oh, now let's fill that in.
Well, I made the mistake. I was interviewed by Movie Line once, and I was writing a Western, and they said, they asked me the same question. Do you actually, you know, go through the motions? And I jokingly said, yeah, I ride my dog around the house with a cowboy hat. And I got a lot of grief about that. So I'm tempering my
answer.
Yeah, I did. So I'm kind of tempering my answer, but I do actually go through some of the physical characteristics. I had a really great experience with, I don't know if you saw the trailer, the book trailer that we shot.
I did.
Okay, in that, I'm the person who gets attacked in the garage there.
I noticed that. I was wondering if you were going to be the main guy in the movie when it gets done.
We don't know. The verdict's still out. I've got too much to worry about right now. But,
gotcha.
You know, we got to rehearse those scenes. And I'd written the novel already, but we got to rehearse those scenes physically. And I had a really great stuntman, Brian Farr, who I was working with. And, you know, it was great to kind of get physical and have somebody actually assault you. And he didn't hold back. We had this brief conversation. He said, hey, do you mind if I kind of go full tilt boogie? And I went, okay. And he put me all the way to the back of the garage in his first tackle, way out of camera range. So we had to adjust that just a bit.
Awesome. And I noticed a little, I was reading the Kickstarter project and some of the other stuff you guys have been posting for the last little while. The little family that was all involved in it.
Yes, the Minkler family. Nancy Minkler is a good friend of mine. And when it came time to shooting, we were like, okay, well, we need some bodies, live bodies. And Nancy's like, I'll come out and help. And I was like, can we get one of the kids too? She's like, yeah, sure. And I was like, can we get another one of the kids too? She's like, sure, I'll bring them all. So she brought her three kids, and she was the zombie. She's the one where when we're running down that long hallway and there's a couple zombies that are chasing us, and then Ray turns around and shoots them in the head.
Nice.
She's the little petite dark-haired woman who just, she does such a good fall. Like, she just takes the bullet in the head and just falls flat on her face. And it was
on brick.
Yeah, it was so good. She's still, in my books, the best at taking a shot in the head and falling down on her face on cement.
A big bag of ouch and on the plane.
Yeah, it was awesome. And then her husband, he was a boom operator. So, but he's in his professional life. He's not that wasn't a professional job,
wow.
But his day job is he is a professional sound mixer. Like, I mean, he mixed like Natural Born Killers, and he's worked a bunch for Oliver Stone, and he did the recent Scream movie. So he's all over the place. He's terrific. And I think he worked on Girls too, the HBO show.
Nice. So that would lead into another set of questions is you've got a lot of talent behind the project and its various, buckets of activity.
Oh, yeah.
It always amuses and interests me as to how you get all of that people to go. I mean, does it just sort of develop, or is there we've got an evil secret plan, we're going to get that guy, and we're going to get that one, and
Well, Hollywood, you can't walk down the street and throw a rock at a tree without having an actor fall out. But we've been really fortunate enough to know a lot of great talent, and they've been really supportive with this. I mean, it's sort of you're here in LA and they're all right there.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been really lucky. People like Richard Hatch from Battlestar is a huge fan of this project. And he, in fact, if you watch the presentation on Kickstarter that Kim gives it, she does a great presentation. Richard Hatch is one of the, he wanted to come on and do a cameo on it. So mm-hmm. We were really lucky with that.
Yeah. I noticed that when I watched and when I first saw Kim share that. It was like, dude, oh, that's Nate. Holy crap, that's Richard Hatch walking right by there. It's like, what? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then we had, like as we said before, Mike Minkler, one of our business partners, who's actually Chris Minkler, who I was talking about before. It's his dad, Michael Minkler. He's our business partner within Moving Pictures Media Group. He mixed the trailer. So, I mean, we got an Academy Award-winning sound mixer for the trailer. And then, you know, you make friends when you go to events or parties and you meet people and you network. And then when you're doing something creative, I mean, everyone loves being creative. So you get together and you...
Create!
Yeah, you shoot it, you jam, and then you order some pizza and have some beer. It's fun.
Yeah, it's just like working in a warehouse.
Yeah.
We used to do that all the time.
Right?
Exactly. So I'm going to throw in another thought because I love this about zombie movies and zombie stories and zombie books and comic books and everything. One of the things that I heard, learned, knew about from people who shoot guns a lot is that the headshot is the hardest shot.
Yes.
Yet everybody in the zombie movie is, in general, ends up being, oh, look, I'm a marksman. I can get him in 3 shots.
No. Yeah, no, I was a, I don't know if you looked into my background, I was actually a firearms instructor for a few years.
He's taught me everything I know about guns.
And how to be safe.
Yes, of course, safety first.
How to be safe and how to shoot efficiently and how to actually hit the target.
Well, I was a firearms instructor, and when you talk about, it's not so much the size of the head, it's the fact that it's on a pivot and it's moving constantly. And then the other thing is you're breathing. So you've got a rhythm with your breathing, which means your weapon is rising and falling ever so slightly. And then you've got this watermelon that's pivoting back and forth on a post and coming at you and making really nasty sounds. So yes, headshots really hard. And generally what they teach is you do 2 to the chest, which the kinetic energy of a bullet hitting the chest slows the body down for a moment and freezes it in place. So you can then breathe and take the headshot. Just thought you might want to know.
Now that is a good piece of information because I wouldn't have even thought of that.
That's like a soundbite right there. Like,
yeah.
Gun tactics 1-on-1 with Ray Allingson.
Right.
Exactly. Now I'm going to have to train the rest of my zombies how to avoid that.
All right.
Thanks for the information.
Exactly.
Yeah. Whoops.
So with the 100 Days of Death, you've got all of this going on for the first book. Do you expect also to have 100 Days of Death second movie with the second book and the third book as it comes down?
Yes, we've been speaking with Platinum Studios, which we're going to make a formal announcement. They did Cowboys and Aliens and originally published the comic book for Men in Black and also Jeremiah, the series. They're very interested in working with us on this. And one of the first questions that Scott Rosenberg, who owns the company, said was, do we get all 3 books? So we're actually negotiating that deal, and we would very much like to make all 3 films.
That sounds stellar and outstanding, because, you know, when you can get it all tied in, it's better.
Oh yeah.
And we'll also use Tommy for book 2 and 3 of the graphic novels as well. We've had long discussions with him about it. So, yeah, we'd like to make this franchise all the way through.
And then, obviously, you've got other things planned, because it doesn't all happen all at once, right? I mean, you've got other projects that are side going. You've got work that does this and work that does that and work that does that. How the formative process in creating and finishing that out, like, what's that like?
Okay.
The formative process of finishing what out? I'm not...
Oh, sorry. I tend to be random sometimes. So
no, it's okay.
You get one project you're working on. You're obviously not going to finish it in a linear fashion. You do some of it now. You do some of it later. You do some of it later. And then you come back to it all over again and redo some of it.
Uh-huh.
How do you find working with this kind of a project where it is going to be probably, what, over the next couple of years when it's finished, all 3 chapters of it are done?
At least, yeah.
Yeah, more like 5 years.
And do you plan for that kind of working environment to go, okay, well, we shift from here, then we shift into that, then we go into this mode, and hey, we've also got these other activities we're working on too.
We've got, yeah, and our production company, you know, we have multiple pictures in our slate. We're working on a mockumentary right now. We're trying to gear up for 100 Days of Death. We have another project that may or may not happen. But I think what you do is you just organize it onto a schedule. And you know that, you know, from this month to this month, you'll be booked out. And then you'll hopefully get some time to breathe in between. And then you hopefully have enough time in between those cycles to get geared back up and go, oh my God, we're doing book 2 now. This is awesome. Let's get back into the groove.
And there is a certain fluidity to it. Like I experienced this as an actor where when you go from TV show to film to hosting to back to another film, like you just step into it. and you're like, okay, I'm here now, and this is what I'm working on right now, and you just give it all your attention and love, and then it flourishes and grows. And there, you know, there is a certain amount of, you know, especially when it comes to big films, you know, there's a lot of different elements that come into play to make a film happen. So sometimes you may have had a little bit more steam on one project, but if the other one gets funded first, then you shift your focus and you start working on that. And then when that's finished, then you bring your focus to the other one. I mean, we have 6 films in our slate right now that are all at various stages of development. So right now, 100 Days of Death, has got, there's a lot of work involved in that, especially with the Kickstarter that, you know, is our primary focus right now, and also getting the graphic novel going and the novel being published. We have some work to do around that and the feature film. But we've also got the mockumentary that's got a lot of heat on it. Do you want to talk about Mad Max?
I was first going to say one thing. You must be an English or philosophy or communications major.
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
Why?
You have a great way of just explaining everything, bam, like that. And it's like, okay, that works.
Yeah, that totally works. Thank you.
So now let's go with Mad Max. I saw a bit of a mention on that somewhere and wasn't too sure what that was.
It's a mockumentary, if you're familiar with the term.
Oh, yes.
From Spinal Tap, things, Best in Show, things like
Christopher
that.
Christopher Guest's work.
Everything goes to 11.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So it's a mockumentary about Juan Tyrone Garcia, who supposedly from 1975 to 1979 flashed through the martial arts and film communities like a lightning bolt, then sadly and tragically disappeared, never to be heard from again. This is the story about Juan Garcia and his 5 epic films, his 5 Mexploitation films, which were, Breath of Death, 6 Deadly Fingers of Fury, Mad Max, which supposedly is a predecessor to Mad Max, how am I blanking on Mad Max's producer?
I am too.
I want to say George Martin.
I interviewed him. Wow, I can't believe we're all blanking.
I think it's George Martin.
That's
He's going to
smack
us all in the
It's
head.
Okay. Google's good for that.
We're right. all going to hell.
But
we're going to be eaten by zombies.
Right? Yeah.
But I think, so Mad Max, which is supposedly the predecessor to Mad Max, Pimp Madness and Kung Fu Starfighters were his big epic films. It's hosted by a narrator who's an actor playing himself, who's supposedly doing this because he's using this research because he's going to be playing the role of Juan Garcia in the movie about his life. And it's just a downward spiral from there.
But he obliviously, he's got like the Forrest Gump syndrome. He's got like a horseshoe up his bum. Like he just obliviously falls into success after success after success. Meanwhile, he's a circuitous talker. He makes no sense, but it's like Hollywood's all based on, it's a lot of it's built on perceptions, right? And if something's hot, if something is cool, then, you know, everybody jumps on the bandwagon. And, you know, Juan Tyrone Garcia is the it thing. But
he's clueless. Like Chauncey Gardner in Being There, he just has no idea what he's doing.
That sounds interesting and fun. So it's one of these, in the movie, you're out of the movie, you're in, and your perspective is, oh, okay.
It's like you're watching a documentary of somebody who actually existed, but he's the greatest martial artist that never was.
Nice. And did you watch a lot of old-fashioned Chinese kung fu movies?
I was a huge Bruce Lee fan growing up, and, you know, I watched everything. When HBO started coming out with all these import kung fu movies, these, you know, legend films is what they're referred to as, I was watching every single one of them. I even ordered my first pair of kung fu shoes through a comic book, and I wore them religiously while I watched Bruce Lee films.
And did you read Shang-Chi, Master of Kung Fu?
Of course, Marvel comic, absolutely, and Iron Fist, and there was a whole slew of those that came out in that period, Howard the Duck issue. I want to say 4, where he learned kung fu.
Nope, Quack Fu.
Quack Fu, correct. Thank
I
you.
Have strong Quack Fu.
Yes, and I absolutely have 1 through 10 of Howard the Duck were some of my favorites when we go back to the comic thing here.
Awesome.
Film when I was a kid, and I loved
the film. The film sucked.
But I loved it. I loved the film when I was a kid, okay? So don't take that away from me. That's my childhood memory. George Miller.
Miller, thank you.
Yes.
It's Miller time.
Yes, that would be the Mad Max reference.
Director and director of Happy Feet.
Yes. So, moving on.
So,
Howard the Duck.
I loved it. okay. I'm allowed to like what I like.
Now, just so you know, with Howard the Duck, they created the Marvel Max series, and they took Howard the Duck and made him a rat.
Nice.
What?
Yeah, he was a big giant... Well, he was cursed by some... I can't remember who it was, but he got cursed, changed in body shape, and they changed him into a big giant rat, and now he's that.
Aww.
But in the regular comic book series, he's still back to Howard the Duck.
Okay. Wow. I can't believe it's still going on.
No, Howard as an individual series, no. He has little short runs. Now he's part of Marvel Zombies universe, which has one of the... Are we familiar with Bruce Campbell?
Of course.
Okay. I love his work on pretty much everything he's done, but one of the Marvel Zombies series is Army of Darkness versus Marvel Zombies. It's the second series.
Got it.
So they have this little spoiler, scary, end of the book, where Howard the Duck is a zombie and is eating Ash's brains.
Ah.
Oh, wow.
Great scene, but it's just one of those little weird, hey, look, we fooled you. The next issue actually does something different.
All right.
Went back to the old... Fantasy issues of DC Universe where Superman became something and then it turned out it was just a dream episode.
It was a parallel Ash.
Right.
Yes.
Got it. Okay.
But comics are fun. I mean, you can create kinds of worlds there. It's like anything you want to do, as long as you can make it sound good, it looks good.
Yeah.
So you back to zombies.
Yeah. Zombies are good. They're nature's recycling mechanism.
It's good way to put that.
I've never thought of it that way. That's good.
Yep. It's the way that the Earth is going to clean itself up a little bit and say, 7 billion people? Not so much.
Right. Yeah.
It's going to weed out the weak, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, I have enjoyed you guys being on with the show. You guys have been an absolutely stunning couple of guests.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope anytime you want to come back, you're more than welcome to come back on again.
Absolutely.
That'd be great.
And I just wanted to throw it, because I was also reading the sites earlier, that you've had a lot of press released recently over the last, couple months about the projects.
Mm-hmm.
CNN, The Examiner, I think I also saw the Toronto Star something.
Oh yeah, it was all over the place. It was in the Washington Post. It was on like 6 different Fox News outlets. It was amazing. Like they did like a massive press release, and it went to 348 outlets.
Cool.
Yeah, and that was just that one day, along with the CNN press and Celebster and all the various magazines that we've been featured in. So that's Lexicon Publicity. They are fantastic. They're so good. They rep Trisha Helfer, Martin Sheen. They're phenomenal.
Us.
Awesome. So one of the little weird things that I'm going to comment notice on, because you're mentioning Richard Hatt and you're mentioning Trisha Helfer, is there seems to be, from the second series Battlestar Galactica put on by the wonderful TV people down in the States, they seem to be everywhere.
Who's that?
The actors and all of the people involved with that project. That seems to have been a huge gestalt program for all of those people that were involved with that.
Oh, yeah, like Katie Sackhoff, boom, Trisha Helfer, boom, you know, Richard Hatch continued his career. Like, it did wonders for everybody's career involved.
And I think everybody on the show did a fantastic job and deserves what they got afterwards.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I would say exactly the same thing, because I loved what they did with that. I mean, the naysayers can say, it's not the same. It's like, it's not supposed to be.
No, it's a reimagining. It was terrific.
Well, it's kind of funny because right before the show aired, Richard Hatch and I had a conversation, and we were a little dubious about Edward James Olmos. And we didn't know. We had no frame of reference. All we had was, you know, some of his past films. And the first night it aired, I remember I called up Richard and I was like, Richard, he goes, no, he's amazing. So, I mean, they knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, he was so good.
It got a little slow for a little bit, but then it brought it back. It's like, damn, that's exactly the way this type of story should be playing. It should be dark. It should be gritty. And you should have no hope and then get hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good turn. And I loved Katie Sackhoff's character, Starbuck. Oh, she was fantastic.
And she was awesome in Big Bang Theory in her couple of guest spots.
Yeah, I worked with her. We played best friends on, it used to be called How I Married My High School Crush, and now I think it's called The Wedding Wish. And she's a super cool gal as well.
I could always tell that because she's always smiling.
You know, it's interesting because you'll see people on TV and then you wonder what they're like in real life. And, you know, I worked with her. I saw her on the show and then I got the opportunity to interview her through Space. And then we played best friends in that film, you know, months later. And it was like, awesome, awesome. She's totally cool.
Well, this is being the wrapping up the tail end of the show. Tell everybody how to follow you, follow the project. And what are all the lovely little links and stuff?
Absolutely. So the Kickstarter campaign, you can go onto Kickstarter and look up 100 Days of Death.
That's the number 100.
Yeah. Like 100 Days of Death. You'll find us there. Or you can go onto Facebook and look up 100 Days of Death, and we're there. And then personally on Facebook, I'm at Kim Poirier, and that's P-O-I-R-I-E-R.
For those people who do not understand the slightly French pronunciation.
Poirier. In English, it's Poirier.
Yeah.
And then Ray Ellingson's on Facebook as well, at Ray Ellingson. And then we also have a website for 100 Days of Death, which is at 100daysofdeath.com. We have movingpicturesmediagroup.com, which is for our production company. And you can see the various films that we have in our slate. You can get some more information on Mad Max. And then, what else? Same thing on Twitter. You can follow us on Twitter at Kim Poirier and 100 Days of Death.
And there's various YouTube videos out there on YouTube under both of our names.
Yes.
And they're all fun to watch, and everybody should watch them.
Aw, thanks. Well,
thank you.
Well, I haven't seen all of them, but I will.
All right.
Cool.
People, thank you again for showing up on the show, and I hope you have lots of rotting success.
Awesome. Thank you.
Good night.
If you go down in the woods today, you're sure of a big surprise. If you go down in the woods today, you'd better go in disguise. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day that teddy bears have their pick.